life would have been a lot easier if I would have acquired fewer properties, really focused on the ones that I had that were the highest quality deals, and preserved cash for a rainy day. Call it harder luck, but I always knew I wanted to have a business. I was not just a mentee, but a partner and an actual owner in that business as we built it. Most developers start location-based primarily, and we're quite the opposite. We start zoning-based. Oftentimes, reality is different from local perception and guides investors, and especially in smaller secondary and tertiary markets, most of the people investing in those markets are locals.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, legal, or investment advice. Please consult a professional advisor before making any decision based on what you hear on the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Distress to Success, where we talk with professionals who are helping reinvent blighted communities in a profitable way. With me today is an excellent guest. I was looking to snag some of Paul's time, but Paul Poteet is the founder of Surge Capital Group, and is unique in the fact that he specializes in multifamily, but multifamily in, I'll say, secondary, tertiary markets, Paul, if that's a fair assessment, and not necessarily where folks typically target, you know, large multifamily. So I thought it was a great opportunity to kind of get an idea of why you like those areas, what works, what doesn't. So I guess before we dive into that, I guess welcome, Paul. Thanks for hopping on with us.
Yeah, thank you for that introduction. And I'm excited to be here and have this discussion with you.
What's maybe take one little step back and always like to know a little bit more about the past of the guests that we have on. So I guess what led you down the path, or how did you get to what you're doing today?
Yeah. It's a good question. I call it hard-earned luck when I explain it to people, but I always knew I wanted to have a business. I didn't know what that would look like. And in college, I studied entrepreneurship and business management. And I just networked with a lot of different business owners leading to my last semester in college. One of my friend's dads, his father-in-law, was an entrepreneur in Northern Utah. Met with him one day, mentioned the word real estate. I didn't know anything about real estate. And he's like, oh, I need you to meet this guy that he had just met a couple weeks ago. So just through networking, I found a good mentor. And this guy, was brilliant and still is brilliant at, understanding the concepts of development, what creates value in land and properties. So I was able to learn under him for several years, and it was a unique situation where I was not just a mentee, but a partner and an actual owner in that business as we built it, and was able to skyrocket my success from there.
That's awesome. So how long have you been doing, this type of business?
Yeah, I've been doing this. I did it straight out of college, and I graduated in 2017. So I think it's been, 9 years now? Coming up on 9 years is when I first met him.
So you kind of you had very, very, you know, steep road to success. Quick to getting there within 9 years. That's fantastic. Congrats.
I've been really blessed. Yeah, I've been able to do a lot over that 9 year period. I obviously still learning. There's a lot that's ahead of me, but really grateful for what I've been able to do so far.
Well, if you ever feel like you've mastered it all and have nothing left to learn, let me know. I'm still, I don't ever see that light at the end of the tunnel. I guess that's one of the exciting parts about being in real estate, right? Is there always something new, some different niche, some different angle, right? And, you know, one state to the next always varies, right? So, I guess maybe let's hop, I guess, to the present and talk a little bit more about what, you know, Surge Investment Group does and how you found the niche that you found to be so successful for you.
Yeah. So Surge Investment Group is my company. We focus primarily on multifamily and all new construction development. So we're not buying anything that's already built. We're really good at sourcing land. I started off early in my career with the mentor that I mentioned and the previous company I founded with him. We did a lot of land flipping to start. So we would buy infill properties, take it through entitlement or permitting, and sell it at a profit. And then eventually we learned how to take those and finance them for construction and move on from there. So that's what we do now. We buy land, we get it entitled, built, leased up, with the goal of selling it between 1 to 3 years after stabilization of the final asset.
Got it. So you do the whole project start to finish.
That's right.
Fairly unique. I think in the multifamily, right? I think there's folks that specialize in the entitlement, right? It's folks that specialize in the builder, lots of folks that do the building. You guys are definitely unique in the fact that you go source your own land, right? Do the entitlement yourselves, build it, right? And then you tenant right at the end of it and then sell it, you know, after 1 to 3 years of stabilization. Obviously that allows you guys to have, a lot of opportunity for value add, right? And benefit from all that work that you've done. What's kind of a vanilla flavor, like high level, what, you know, project that you found, right? Like, you know, how much you're willing to share, Paul. So if we're digging into some secret sauce, certainly don't be shy and tell me, there, or you know, we can bounce on to the next question. But if like, hey, we found a property worth, you know, we bought the land for X dollars, we were able to get it entitled for Y, right? We put, you know, so many dollars into it. Obviously a lot of sweat and equity over the years, and eventually sold it for Z dollars, and you know, it was a great win. Do you have any like high level examples like that you could share?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple ways I could tackle that question. I just posted an article on this, actually about creating value in land. So there's really successful land deals that we've had that cover the first part of that, and then there's the construction side that also brings a lot of potential for profits and success. But first off, I think it merits having some time and discussion on what's our approach and how are we different than other people and other developers, because most developers start location-based primarily, and we're quite the opposite. We start zoning-based. And what I mean by that is a large developer is going to find a really nice zip code, high income, good location, all that. They're going to find acreage in that area and they're going to say, I want to do this there. And so they're going to then draw up a pretty plan, try and create incentives for the city to want to approve that. And they'll go and ask for a zone change. We approach things differently. So we like to find overlooked areas. Or maybe underlooked, I guess underserved is the better word, underserved areas for multifamily. So oftentimes these will be cities or neighborhoods that for the last 20, 30 years, local perception is that's not a good place to invest.
What's a good example just to kind of give people an idea of like, fair to go find this, right? Google this, what's the city that...
Yeah, yeah. So a great example, I live in Utah, so I'll use Utah as an example. For many years, there's a city, about 30, 45 minutes north of Salt Lake City, called Ogden, Utah. And Ogden, locally has been perceived as the, not a good area. But those perceptions arose from maybe historically, that being true and crime being higher in those areas. But over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, that's significantly changed. You know, there's been new infrastructure improvements. There's been more people moving in, new jobs created in that area, which is substantially changing the overall reality of what the city is, but the perception still stays. And so we started back in 2017, 2018, in that area, everyone in Utah was staying away from Ogden. But the city had just recently passed an ordinance that allowed for multifamily as a use by right in all of their commercial zones. So Utah was with such a constrained market. You know, you have the mountains and the lakes, and so there's a finite amount of land that's available, and very few of those properties are zoned for multifamily. It was a very tough place to find and build multifamily in. But going to Ogden, we now had this city, which is a large city in Utah, in the most prominent zoning, which is their commercial zones, that allowed for multifamily. So we were able to start picking up a lot of properties that were already allowed to do what we wanted to do. Yes, maybe we couldn't pick the perfect location all the time, but usually a commercial property is going to be on a busy road. It's going to be somewhat walkable to other commercial uses. There's a lot to like about those things. And we started picking up properties and we made a lot of profits and money by doing so. because we were willing to invest and believe in an area that other people historically had just overlooked. Right now, you do want to be careful because you can't just go into a place that is currently dealing with those issues. But oftentimes reality is different from local perception, and local perception guides investors. And especially in smaller secondary and tertiary markets, most of the people investing in those markets are locals. And so by having an outside perspective, and you can see things for what they really are, as opposed to what sometimes the perception has led them to believe.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool way to go about, you know, doing it in a different manner. Like, what are some of the things that you look for, you know, in those secondary markets? Like today, you know, I think you mentioned before we hopped on today, but you're not just in Utah, right? You're kind of nationwide, or at least you're willing to look nationwide. So yeah. what are some of those, you know, high level traits that you're looking for to try and narrow down the thousands and thousands of potential secondary markets to some that look a little more interesting to you?
Yeah. So we're investing in Utah, Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida. So primarily in the South, we add Utah to that because we live here. How do we find the individual cities that we invest in? And then how do we find locations within those cities or different neighborhoods that we want to invest in? I think are 2 points to that question. Like I said, we start really from a zoning-based perspective. So as opposed to saying, oh, I want to invest in Arlington, Texas, for example, which is in the DFW area, you can target that, and perhaps you're going to find some land that's zoned to allow for multifamily. Most of the time, you're not. So you're going to have to find a property, and you're going to have to try and get a zone change, which can be very time-consuming and very risky. And so our approach is different. We do an analysis of every city in the Metroplex, and even some of the secondary cities around. Like I said, we like to focus on the secondary, more outlying towns. And so we've looked at almost every city that's of note in the state of Texas. And we've evaluated their zoning ordinance, their use matrix. So we know which cities allow or have zones that allow for multifamily by right. We know all those zones. And our target is to find cities that have commercial zoning specifically, because it's something that people aren't usually looking for or expect to allow for multifamily. And if that commercial zoning allows for multifamily by right, usually there's a lot of commercially zoned properties within a city. So it gives us a wide array of options to go and source. And so how do we arrive to the cities that we're in? Each of the cities that we're currently investing in were cities that were zoned or had ample zoning for what we wanted to do. And so we focused our time looking into those areas. Now that's after we justify the city as far as is there growth? Is there a demand for rent or for rentals there? Are there jobs growing in the area? So we're not just investing in any city that allows us to do what we want, but we're trying to marry those two, you know, what cities are growing and are good actual places for investment. And then what cities allow us to have the most opportunity to find land that's already zoned for what we want to do. And when we find those two together, that's where we spend our time.
Got it. Yeah, interesting. So it's, you know, typically you would be searching, right? Developers are searching for multifamily zoning, right? And that's, you know, looking for land that's that, yeah. Or they're, you know, maybe to your first example, right? Find an area and they want to buy a land no matter what it's zoned, and they go about trying to get it rezoned, right? Which is a painful process as yep. well.
Everybody knows that in MF2 zone, you can build multifamily, you know, maybe 20 units to the acre, or, you know, everybody knows that. So those types of properties have a lot of competition. But when you're, you know, that one of the 10% of people that knows that in the C2 zone or commercial 2 zone that they allow for multifamily, all of a sudden you have a lot of available properties that very few people are competing. And when you are competing against that on a list of property, you're competing against people that have a completely different use and value assigned to that property. And so it gives you an edge if your desired use happens to be more valuable than their desired use.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a great niche and good find, right, on your part to be able to find and take advantage of that, you know, area that, like you said, most developers don't even think about. So kudos for sure. I guess that it may move into kind of, you know, lessons learned, right? Maybe from a negative and a positive, but maybe we'll start on the negative side. What are some of the, let's say top two or three, like biggest lessons you've learned that, if you were to go back and do it again, you could have told yourself, right, 9 years ago and saved yourself a lot of I think the best term I've heard is real estate tuition, right? Of, you know, you're paying for that education even after you end up going to school, you're paying for it and making, you know, mistakes along the way. But what would be like those top two or three in your mind?
Yeah, I feel like I could spend a lot of time answering this question, but I'll try and be prompt. There's a lot, and I'm sure there's a lot that I'm going through right now that in 10 years from now, I'll wish that I would know now. But one of the key things that comes to mind when you ask that question is less is more. When I talked about how I started with my mentor and we started a company together and built that. There was a point where I sold my interest in that company. And I had, you know, a couple seven figures in cash that I got from that exit. So here I am, not even 30 yet. I have a couple million in the bank account and all sorts of options in front of me. And as an ambitious guy and not having weathered through down cycles in the market, I became really bullish. I invested that money in a lot of different things. I hired a lot of employees. We tied up a lot of properties and we were quite successful in raising money very early on too. And so we acquired those properties, at sometimes not having it fully funded for construction. And just believing that we were going to continue that momentum. And, which is cool. And we've been able to weather that storm, but life would have been a lot easier if I would have acquired fewer properties, really focused on the ones that I had that were the highest quality deals and preserved cash for a rainy day. Because we all know in real estate, back in 2022, things started to really tighten, especially for multifamily. We kind of entered a down cycle for this asset class. And luckily, we've been able to weather that storm, but it hasn't been easy. So if I were to tell myself or give myself advice, you know, back then, it would be do less, really focus on doing the best you can with what you have and make sure that you set aside ample reserves to cover yourself. Don't try and grow like crazy. Just allow yourself to grow incrementally and when the time seems appropriate. And if I had done those things, I would be a lot more successful than I am today. Luckily, I'm still blessed, but that's one of the primary lessons that I've learned. And then hiring the right people and being willing to fire quicker when people aren't right. Those are some lessons that I feel like I've had to learn over the past few years too.
Well, you're not alone in any of those three. So I feel like I heard that advice long ago. I still seem to have needed to learn some of those things myself. And maybe it's just a rite of passage, right? To have to weather that yourself before you get wise enough to learn how to avoid it. Right. And would any
absolutely,
of us,
you know, that's common advice that entrepreneurs give. And it just seems like generic advice until you actually live through it. And you're like, actually really good advice.
Yes. You're spot on. It is, you know, probably some of the best advice, and some of it I didn't necessarily listen to, but I would second everything you just mentioned, Paul, for sure. On the positive side of things, are there any kind of nuggets that you learned along the way that weren't necessarily painful lessons, but things that you would again tell yourself, you know, 9 years ago that, hey, if you maybe do this, right, you'll here's where we had a lot of success, right? And didn't have to have that pain along the way. Anything in that bucket?
Yeah, I've got a couple things that come to mind with that. One's more personal and the other's business related. But on the personal side, I would say I've learned really what's important for myself and what I actually want to accomplish. If you were to ask me 10 years ago, when I was just getting out of college, what I wanted in my life. I would have told you millions of dollars. I want a yacht, all these different things. Right now, all that stuff really doesn't care. And so I've learned what's important for me in my life. And that is, you know, family, relationships, experiences. And that helps influence my decisions in a much different, not necessarily better or worse, but in a different way than I was making decisions earlier in my career. So learning that about myself has been important. And then the other things I would say are, I'm trying to think of how to put this, but I'm sorry, my mind is going. Like, I had something really good, and then it just.
If you remember, we can come back to it. I guess you mentioned a little earlier of you have you wrote an article like kind of detailing, you know, it was a development, but sounds like it's something that's made public. Is there a way to connect with you, Paul, or
yeah?
How does somebody get where can somebody get access to that?
Yeah, so my LinkedIn page is probably the best way. Just connect with me on LinkedIn, follow our company Surge Investment Group on LinkedIn. We do webinars about every 2 weeks. And then we also write articles that I think really dive deep into some of these details that a lot of articles that you see out there will skim and kind of be marketing to try and get you to click another website or whatever. And we're always of the mindset we share everything that we have. I'm not afraid of someone else coming in and taking business away from me. We live in abundance there. So that's the best way to follow us.
That's
for sure.
That is an outstanding, you know, mentality of, you know, if you obviously have found that secret sauce, right. And being willing, right, to share some of that with others, knowing that probably, I don't know if I've heard anybody tell me a story of they shared their secret sauce and it hurt them. Right.
No.
It's either folks.
Yeah. Some people get really guarded about their different ideas or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember what I was about to say.
So
this is along the lines of what are some nuggets or things that I found along the way that have really helped. And that was, as I was younger, I wanted more, especially in development, you want to do the cool project. I'm like, I would love to do this downtown high rise and have this a beautiful architecture, all that. And as I've gotten into my career, I've learned to love simplicity, and the boring almost. And I get pretty excited about those things. If I could build one box for the rest of my life, I'll be pretty happy and I'll be really excited about that one box, because every time you build it, you get more and more efficient, and efficiency equals profits. And so what we've evolved over time is, rather than having a different building type and different unit types on every unique project, we do the same thing. We use the same one bedroom unit, the same two bedroom unit that we do in any project across the country. And we're trying to standardize the same exact building that we repeat across the country too, for all of our future projects. So that's one thing that I get pretty excited about. I nerd out a little bit on, but that's really helped in a lot of different ways with how we're doing our business.
A little bit along the lines of that, the KISS principle, right? Keep it simple, stupid. And that's another piece of advice that has been given to me many, many times over. Sometimes I listen, sometimes I seem to not listen, but it's always been good advice. After the fact, it's like, I should have kept it a little more simple. Awesome. I guess, you know, back to, being able to connect with you, right? And so it's just find Paul Poteet and Surge Investment Group on LinkedIn, right? And you'll post the articles and the webinars through that. Okay.
Yeah. Find me on LinkedIn, and people could also go to our website. It's www.surgeig.com. And you can read up on our company, what we're doing, but LinkedIn's the best way to actually connect and communicate. And, if there's interest, for example, you look at our content and say, hey, I want to know what it's like to invest or work with these guys, then you can shoot me a private message and we can give you our private contact from there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, before we wrap up, Paul, I have a segment that I totally steal from another podcast I listen to that I call Carve Outs. Hopefully they never contact me telling me I'm I guess stepping on their copyright on that. I don't know that it could be, but basically it's, you know, anything random unassociated with what we talked about today that A book you read, word of advice, quote, something you bought, right? That you just think is really cool that you want to share with the audience. I'll go first, give you at least a few seconds to think on it. I read a book recently called Crucial Conversations. And for me, right, of historically being not really, I'd say not entirely adverse to conflict, but really prefer to avoid it, led to not being the greatest, right, at having, you know, crucial conversations. And reading this book was an immense help in helping navigate that. You mentioned, right, you know, hire fast, right, or sorry, fire fast, hire slow. I don't know if that's the exact words you use, but, you know, this was a book that helped me, right, in that journey, the entrepreneurial journey, being able to have those conversations and do it from a place of oddly positivity, right? Of you know, how do you I'll use an example, talk to somebody that maybe isn't the best fit for your team. That doesn't mean they're a bad person. That maybe means they don't have passion for what they're doing. So how can you enable them to go find, you know, passion in doing something else and working with them to help them get somewhere where they're going to be more happy, right? That's just one example of how I've been able to use that book. So anyway, Crucial Conversations for anybody listening. Paul, hopefully I give you enough time to come up with,
yeah.
Yeah, any nuggets from your end?
I have two thoughts recently, and I do a lot of reading. I think that's a big reason why I've been able to achieve some of the things that I have is because I read and I just believe what I read. And so I try to implement those things. One of my favorite things to read is biographies. So I always find myself, this isn't the intent behind reading, but I always find myself judging that person, whether as a good person or a bad person. And I remember about a year ago, I read the biography of Albert Einstein, and who everyone knows and reveres as an amazing scientist. And I remember reading his biography. I'm like, I don't really like him. Because yeah, all the amazing things that he did, but he was a poor father. He was a terrible husband, and wasn't present and showed up for his family. And so my takeaway from that is, you can accomplish all the success in the world, but you know, what does it matter if, you know, you're lacking in integrity and you don't show up for those that you care about and that for those that are depending on you. And so that's something that I keep in mind. And the other one I thought, and I don't want to bring religion as a heavy topic here, but I thought of this through my study of the scriptures. And it was something in there that talked about how God created things spiritually before he created them, physically. I think he created the world spiritually before he created, physically. And I think that's a true principle, in life. Is, you know, a lot of us have goals, things that we want to accomplish. And sometimes we focus a little bit too much on the effort and creation of that in our physical lives. But I think things tend to pan out a lot better for us when we create it spiritually in our minds and in our belief system, and what we can envision to happen. And then the little day-to-day decisions kind of work out from there. And so that's something that I've been trying to implement more so just in my day-to-day business.
That's a very eloquent, much more, I'd say, better way of putting, you know, the concept of manifestation, right? When you manifest something, yeah. Right? I think whether or not they're exactly the same, they're definitely in the same wavelength of what you just mentioned, which I definitely believe wholeheartedly of, if it's not going to happen unless you think about it, constantly think about it, and then you're making every decision along the way trying to achieve that. And I also believe if you do it and do it the right way, right, it will happen. So that's outstanding. Well, Paul, you are honestly, my friend, wise well beyond your years, both in the success you've had, the knowledge that you share, and just your outlook on life. So I greatly appreciate you hopping on and sharing some of that wisdom with us today. Again, one last time, if folks wanted to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. My name is Paul Poteet with Surge Investment Group. You can also visit our website, www.surgeig.com. And I believe we have some contact information listed there if you want to reach out.
Yep. And you listeners can find that information in the show notes below. Well, thanks again, Paul. Good luck, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.